Hi, I'm Dr. Kim Bassoon, and welcome to the Chiropractor's A-Game. Let's get cracking. This podcast is all about helping chiropractors and other functional healthcare professionals to grow in mind, body, and business. This is where I'm going to be sharing my 35 years of experience, tips and strategies, as well as speaking to some of the leaders in our industry so that you have all that you need to not just survive, but thrive. And welcome, everybody. I'm so excited. I have one of my patients and friends, Hugh Kent, and he is the king of blueberries. I should say he's on Blueberry Hill almost because of where he's located. So, Hugh, welcome.
Thank you.
Hugh, let's talk a little bit about how you and I met.
Doctor-patient relationship. Just went to go see the miracle worker and it was wonderful. So you probably are aware of this, but you have quite a reputation in the community. And people said, well, you're a mess. Go see Dr. B. So that's what I did.
Yeah. So we also did some functional medicine with you because we were having some issues liver-wise and cellulitis-wise many, many years ago. And we contributed that to originally, I guess, we talked about your experience in the farming world when it wasn't so organic and neat and tidy.
Some chemical exposure over the years. As I've learned more, yeah. I think probably glyphosate is a contributor for me. It's Roundup was used pretty heavily in the citrus industry in Florida.
That's why I know you're so passionate because you understand those intricacies personally and professionally. And in the ag world, it's just kind of overwhelming, the use of the chemicals and the pesticides and insecticides. So let's talk about blueberries. Tell me how long you've had the farm, how that all started.
Well, the true king of this farm is a guy named John King, who homesteaded it in the 1870s. In 1874, he came down from Buffalo, New York to primitive Florida and with his wife and two little kids. And they went by steamship from Buffalo to Savannah and horseback from Savannah here. And he built a house, planted one of the first orange groves in Florida and named the farm King Grove. He had done this under the Homestead Act, where the federal government was looking to populate Florida. So they gave him a provisional deed 10 years later. He had abided by the terms of the agreement. They gave him the permanent deed and he sold it to one of my ancestors in 1890. Been in my family since. And about 20 years ago, my parents decided to sell it. And one of my sisters and I got together and got the financing and bought the farm. Sold part of it and started the blueberry farm on the rest of it. So there's a lot of history here. It's a beautiful piece of property, lots of elevation changes. If you're not familiar with Central Florida, it's one of the places that's got hills and we have lots of water here, some old growth woods and wetlands and lots of wildlife. It's a beautiful place to live.
It's a gorgeous place. And I recall the first time I actually went out there to pick up blueberries, it was, I guess, during COVID, before you used to do kind of you pick, now you pick. And everybody else gets the benefit of that. But I remember going out there and I'm a big birder. So I go out there and I'm like looking around. I'm like, Marianne's like, what are you looking for? I'm like, look, I hear them. They're predator birds. I hear the predator birds. I don't see them. And then, of course, you tell me you have play that predator bird track through the speakers so that you keep the other birds away, which I thought that was just brilliant. But the wildflowers are gorgeous there. And to be on the farm is amazing. And I will have to say the blueberries are, there are none to compare. I mean, they're big as your thumb. They are delicious. We always have them. And if we don't have them in our freezer, it's like, okay, when's blueberry season? Hugh, do you have any blueberries? And so you've been great to us to share your secret stock. And we appreciate that. And then we do it through our office too. I mean, I think to me, it's a nice blend because of my mindset of being so organic and trying to have the good food selection. And to have this right in our backyard is just amazing. And the fact that I can ship it to friends and family is even more amazing because you do it so well and you're so passionate about it. Tell me why your blueberries are so special.
I think they're special because for a couple of reasons. One of them is that these are real organic blueberries. And what I mean by that is that they're grown in soil. A lot of people know that soil is supposed to be proper growth media for organic agriculture and crops, but increasingly, we're no longer growing in soil. There's hydroponic systems have been taking over. They're done at an industrial scale. A lot of it's done south of the border, actually most of it now. And something that really hasn't reached public awareness yet, but there are U.S. multinationals that move to Mexico, Peru, and Chile, and they grow enormous quantities of organic blueberries with a very different growing system. Instead of using soil, they use an inert coconut coir usually. It's an inert substrate that goes into a plastic pot or increasingly just a plastic bag. And that plastic container is put on plastic ground cover. And then a solution of fertilizer is dripped through the pot. And that's accepted by the USDA as organic. Nowhere, this is very significant, nowhere else in the world can you get away with labeling hydroponic as organic. You can't do it in the EU. You can't do it in Mexico. You can't do it in Canada, Australia, nowhere else but the United States. This is very troubling to me as a farmer, of course, because I play by the rules and I grow in soil, but also as an eater, because I don't believe that a simple hydroponic solution, which hasn't changed in 40 years really, can replicate the benefits, the taste, or the nutrition that you get from a soil-grown crop. I think this is becoming a little bit more relevant to people, but soil, it's an extraordinary living thing. And in a tablespoon of healthy soil, there are 8 billion microbes, and that's as many people as there are on the planet. And I've got a Cornell ag professor, cousin of mine, and I said, well, Meg, I understand that you guys don't even know more than 10% of these microbes. And she said, well, that's very generous of you. She said, it's really more like between 1 and 10%. We have no names for the others. We don't know what they do. We don't understand their function or relationship to each other. We just know that there's this universe of living microbes in soil that interact with plant root tips and the exudates from the plants. And there's this magic of biology, chemistry, and physics that goes on there that creates real food. And in my mind, it makes sense that human gut microbiome, which is similarly made up of a poorly understood billions of microbes, co-evolved over eons with this soil microbiome. And this is the food that we're meant to eat if we're to stay healthy as we can. I think it's a bit disturbing. And in my view, it's fraudulent that we now have most of the organic blueberries are being grown, at least the ones in the spring, are being grown hydroponically. And this is true also of tomatoes. Talking to a real organic tomato grower recently, he said 90%. He believes about 90% are now hydroponic. And also peppers, cucumbers, greens. This is not an isolated crop that's experiencing this, but this is a wholesale shift to an industrial form of agriculture, which I believe doesn't produce anywhere near the same nutrition. And it certainly has different effects on the environment. We're expected to grow with, to maintain our farms with a lot of respect for woodlands, wetlands, wildlife, for what else is on our property and for around us in our community. And this is not the same requirement that applies to hydroponics. It's very industrial.
And we hear so much more about microbiome these days. I teach a course to doctors on gut microbiome. I teach about all the hormones that are involved in the gut microbiome. And it's just amazing that you'd have to put 100 million oranges together to represent all the microbiomes in the gut. It would stretch from here to Pluto and then past that. So, I mean, it's just an enormous amount. And when we're working with patients as far as integrative medicine and we're working on gut health, we will suggest for patients to take three different vegetables and fruits that are grown in soil, that are organic grown in soil, and blend them in a blender and take a shot of that for 1 week every night. And then next week, change that, because each plant has its own microbiome and we benefit from that. And I think the health of our digestive health is probably the biggest things that I see in my office, people coming in. And if I'm working with a patient that has these maladies or that needs that kind of support, number one, we always have to fix the gut first. And my first shift is always to get them to eat more organic food and to feed themselves, because we're eating processed dead food. And I think that's just, it's a sad state of affairs for our human bodies and human bodies of the future. So tell me, because I know how great your blueberries are, and we have them at night. My favorite way to do blueberries is that we freeze them. I take them out, splash a little organic whipping cream, maybe a little bit more than a splash of organic whipping cream over top. And it's like you have blueberry ice cream. And that's just amazing. So you tell your friends that they should eat how many blueberries should they eat a day? I love that.
not a lot, but you should eat them every day. A small handful, 10 to 12 berries, provides a good share of the benefits that you get from them. To me, one of the most fascinating things is, because I've experienced it personally, is that the compounds in blueberries, anthocyanins and others that maybe aren't recognized, seem to have tremendous beneficial effects on the aging brain. There are now double-blind studies, most of them in Europe, which look at blueberries and Alzheimer's, pre-Alzheimer's, just geriatric brain function in general. And they're seeing all kinds of benefits, which are being identified as a result of the fortification that the blueberry compounds provide to microglia, which are scavenger cells in the brain that are responsible for running around, cleaning things up, repairing things, attacking some of the bad stuff. So it makes a lot of sense to me when I look back at my own experience with it. I was having a lot of these late middle age, what am I doing in this room? Or where are my keys? So I started doing this and I ate a small handful for a month and I've kept it up ever since. I really feel like my brain functions much better than it did 5 or 10 years ago. And that's really fun. So I've asked people who come here and they say, well, I got long COVID. I have no science to back this up at all, but I do have lots of anecdotes of people saying, I had long COVID. I felt like I had this fog. And I said, well, try this. Eat a small handful of these things for a month and come back and tell me what you think. And I've had wonderful feedback from people on that. So the science is fascinating to read. I don't understand all of it, but I certainly have seen for myself and heard from a lot of people about that direct effect. It's a wonderful food. There really is not a lot of purple foods out there. And so the compounds in there that create that color are tied to a lot of health benefits.
Yeah. And when you're talking about the brain, one of the things that blueberries do, the chemical compounds, phytonutrients in the blueberries, support the brain in a way by supporting BDNF, which is brain neurotrophic factor. And that is one of the things that's neuroprotective. So that's where you're getting that protection from those neuroinflammatory diseases like Alzheimer's and dementia and Parkinson's. Another thing it really helps, those new phytonutrients help to support that are in the blueberries, especially organic and especially the way you grow them, is for NRF2. NRF2 is what protects our mitochondria, the cell, the core that makes us who we are, every living thing has. And when you can get that protection from a blueberry, it's pretty amazing. There are other things that do that, but like I said, the phytonutrients in the blueberries are just amazing. Those are also important for detoxing in the liver. It's to help do those enzymatic changes in the liver that need to happen so that liver can remove all the toxins. So, I mean, there's a lot of underlying effects that we can go into the deep, dark science on. You said you're going to nerd out about plants grown in water hydroponically or in the soil. I can do it the opposite way in the brain because I know the benefit of all those phytonutrients. So for me, having somebody like you in our community just locally and knowing that people can actually order and you can ship to them so they can have this beautiful chewing of phytonutrients that is not only neuroprotective, but is also, it's an anti-inflammatory. So we have that. And I'm a big low-carb, high-fat girl. So that's where blueberries come in because they're very low in the glycemic index. And that way I can splash more than just a little of that organic whipping cream on there. So tell me about the process at the farm, how that all happens. Give us a ballpark of how that works.
I'm fixated on something you just said. So if it's okay, I want to go back for a second and then talk about the processes on the farm. But I come at this from the other direction, of course, which is light on the science. And I'm very excited about the scientists who are now starting to look at the difference between crops and the nutrient value dependent on what the farming system was, how the crops were grown. So you certainly can hydroponically grow a big, beautiful tomato or blueberry, but you can certainly grow a big person with McDonald's also. So it's not really the right measure for whether this is valuable food or not. And then I'm a believer that nutrient density follows taste, that there's something innate in our bodies. We understand what's good for us. If something tastes really good, it makes a lot of sense that because we know it's good for us and we can be fooled by soluble sugars and so forth and get a jolt of energy and our bodies might think, well, that was good for us. But beyond that, when you're talking about real food, I do think there is a connection between how appealing it is for us to eat, how delicious it tastes, that our tongues are a good instrument for letting us know whether something's good for us or not. I love how we have a lot of supporters and we have neurologists and they tell us how important this food is to them and they really appreciate being able to get soil grown, real organic blueberries. But we also have kids come out here at the other end of the sophistication spectrum. They come out and they eat their weight in blueberries and their parents talk about discipline problems because they're trying to keep the kids out of the blueberry box. So that's really gratifying. The way we grow is a little bit unscientific, the way I do it. And by that, I mean, I don't understand what's going on out here a lot of the time. my job as an organic farmer, and I've come to trust over the years, is to make the soil as healthy as possible. And healthy soil makes a healthy plant makes a healthy crop, and then that makes healthy people. So my concentration is on soil. And because it's poorly understood even by the soil science PhDs, I just fall back on an effort to improve biodiversity. I want to get as much biological activity going on in the soil. I want there to be lots of microbes at work. I want there to be a whole assortment of minerals and nutrients for the plant. And I trust the plant from there. The plant knows what to do. There's lots of evidence that plants will change their own chemistry. They'll go out and use the microbes to recruit what they need to change their own chemistry to repel pests, for example, down to the level of them sensing an attack by a leaf eater like a grasshopper or something, and they will make themselves less appealing to that pest by changing their own chemistry. So they have a sort of an immune system, but it's an external one. It's this whole universe of interaction that they have with healthy soil. So my job as an organic farmer is to get the soil as healthy as possible to increase the organic matter. And the way we do it here is we grow a lot of the fertility on the farm in between the rows of plants. And we plant cover crops, or sometimes now increasingly we just let nature grow what it wants to, but we pay a lot of attention to what grows in the rows in between the plants. Everything is vegetative out here. It's all green. There's no plastic. There's nothing to cover the ground. We have grasses out there. We've got broadleafs out there. There's all kinds of things that people would consider weeds, but we've designed and fabricated specialized mowing equipment, which cuts and mulches and throws up onto the bed this biomass, this green manure. And this green manure, as it decomposes, feeds the plant. And also it creates a thatch, which is very useful in the weed control for us. So it's a very big living system. I don't completely understand. I see lots of life out there. I believe there are all kinds of different beneficial creatures that live there. We're told as farmers by the traditionalists that there really aren't any beneficials, maybe spiders, ladybugs. That's about it. But I don't think that's right. I think there are interaction of countless different types of organisms, some that you see and some that you don't. And if you can create a balance, you give the plant what it needs for variety and biodiversity in the soil. It's quite a miracle that happens, you know, some sunlight and some water, and there you go.
So the plants that you grew blueberries on last year, will those be the same plants that grow blueberries this year?
Yes, they're a perennial.
So tell me about the process. Like, once you pick the blueberries, give me just kind of a ballpark how that all happens.
The day after we finish harvesting, we prune the plants vigorously or dramatically. So they'll be cut down to maybe half their size, which is something that rejuvenates them. We cut them. We make sure that they're doing well. We may supplement their fertilizer a little bit with an organic fertilizer. Not much, but we want to make sure that they're starting to grow again before we cut them. And we want them to recover quickly from the trauma of that. We try to keep them as unstressed as possible throughout the whole year. That's really, you know, another way of measuring whether we're doing well or not. It's the organic matter and the biodiversity in the soil. And it's also just how much we can get through the year without stressing the plant. So we cut them. It's quite stressful, but then they bounce back very quickly. And of course, since we're in Florida, the growing season is vigorous and long, and they will grow. They'll double in size over the summer. And we ask them to start slowing down a little bit. We'll cut back on the water as that regulates their growth also. And as we move into the fall, and they'll go dormant. And when they go dormant, they're generally deciduous, even as far south as here. So they'll lose their leaves, some or all of them. They'll go into a dormant period throughout the wintertime. And then they start to wake up in late January, and the buds swell. The flowers come out usually right around Valentine's Day. It's really nice. It's a big peak with millions and millions of little tiny, delicate white flowers out there. It's gorgeous. And that happens around mid-February. And then petals come off. We have bees out here. Of course, they help us with the pollination. But we have other pollinators. We've got Florida bumblebee that is out here. We have wasps and butterflies, and there are lots of things flying around there to help us pollinate aside from the honeybees. And after the flowers are pollinated, the petals fall off and the berries start to form. And then we go through this time of year where the berries start out as little green, little hard little green things, and then they start to expand and grow. And then as they start to grow, that's when the plants flush out. So most of the flowering is done on plants that are non-vegetated. They haven't flushed out yet. So there are small leaf buds and there are the flowers. But then when the flowers start to become berries, then the plant pauses for a little bit, flushes out this beautiful light green early growth, and then it starts to finish off the blueberries. So here we are in late March, and we're starting to pick. So the berries are green, and then they turn red, then they turn purple, and they turn blue, and we pick them. We have to go by each plant every 3 or 4 days to get the berries that are ripe. And when those are off, then the plant starts working on the next one. We come by that same plant 3 or 4 days later, pick again, and then we start all over again. So for us, the springtime is very chaotic. Summer's a lot of hard work. In the fall, it slows down a bit. There's about a month in December where we relax and catch up on all the things we should have done. And then in January, we start getting ready and freeze protect if it gets too cold. And then we get into February, we're getting ready for harvest. And then we're into the chaos again. Happy chaos.
Well, it's certainly, yeah, it's happy chaos, definitely. And it's certainly amazing. So while you were talking, I just popped on PubMed, which is where, as a speaker and a teacher, I have to document everything I say. And on PubMed, just the first thing I pulled up was just blueberry and brain health. And just right up off the bat, there are 49 publications about the benefits of that. So I'll forward those to you so you can read those, because I think it'd be quite interesting. But once again, it's just the antioxidants that are in there, the color of the blueberry, and it's just talking about managing for gestational diabetes and obesity. So there's all these things that are also taken care of by a blueberry. So I think that it's such a fabulous fruit. And for me, being a like I said, a low-carb, high-fat girl, it's the only fruit that I eat is a blueberry. And the only blueberries I eat are yours. And when we're low, like I said, it's stress in our household. Oh my gosh, what are we going to do? It's not May yet. It's not April yet. We don't have any blueberries. And when can people start ordering blueberries?
Well, I wanted to, they can do it now. Our website is live.
Yeah.
And we're selling for this season. I wanted to mention, though, that you had asked what's different about our growing system. And I forgot there's something that's very different, which is our handling process after we pick. So typically, the way blueberries are processed is they come out of the field at ambient temperature. They're maybe 80, 90 or higher in the sun. And then they're put on refrigerated trucks that follow the harvest around the field. And they go down to maybe 60 degrees. That night, they'll go to 58. They'll be trucked to a packing house. They sit at 58 or 55 degrees for 36 to 48 hours. And then they go to a 55 degree room and they're packed. And then only then do they go down to 34 degrees, which is when the berry stops degrading in quality. So that's not how we do it here. We're able to do everything on this farm. It's not a big farm. So we're able to do the entire process here. So we pick and sort and pack and have the berries in our own coolers, but at 34 degrees within a couple of hours. And I do believe that makes a significant difference in terms of taste and probably nutrition as well. So that these are really fresh blueberries. When people order them and they get shipped by UPS, that's the process they've gone through. They've been picked, sorted, and packed within a couple of hours. They're into a cooler. And then when we ship them out right away to UPS, we put them in packaging with sustainable, as good as we can find, insulation and ice pack. And they go second day air. If they're in Florida, they manage to get there overnight. And we've been doing this for 4 years now with great results. People love the freshness and they say, wow, these things, we put them in our refrigerator, they'll last for a month. So a lot of these things that come from Central and South America, they spend 3 weeks on a boat. So they get here and they don't have much life left in them. So I think that's maybe a good answer for your question about, well, how are yours different and why do yours taste so good? I think that's a big part of it.
Oh, absolutely. We do a local farmers market as well. And it's always shocking to us how our lettuces will keep for a week and a half, where when you get them from the store, even though they may be organic, they last less than 2 days. So that degradation of the phytonutrients happens quickly. And knowing that also just more throws in the importance of the packing and the benefit of getting that packed quickly without shipping it. And you can taste the difference. And I mean, I just, you know, I'm a fan and, you know, I want to do a dinner out there on the farm and everything. So it's going to happen. I know it. I know it. Well, Hugh, I really, really appreciate you. And are the flowers blooming out there?
The wildflowers. Yeah, the wildflowers are blooming there. We've had a very hot, very dry February, so it's not as impressive as most years, but we still have a few weeks to go and they can recover if we get a little bit of rain.
Perfect. Well, Hugh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I will be there. I will come to visit.
Excellent. Well, we look forward to it. It's always a big pleasure to talk to you.
All right. Thanks, Hugh.